This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is The Morning Run, and you're here with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen, and Noel Lim. In about half an hour, we're going to be taking a look at DAP with Adib Zalkapli, Director of Bauer Group Asia. But in the meantime, let's talk about MRT3, because the MRT Corp is anticipating scheduling the tender for the MRT3 Circle Line in August, according to its CEO, Dato' Mohd Zarif Hashim. So the rail developers already issued requests for information to industry players as it intends to change the construction methods as well as spur development of local techniques.
While Dato' Zarif did not elaborate on the cost of the project, a previous media reports estimated the range to be around 20 to 30 billion ringgit, and Dato' Zarif also added that the government is committed to supporting the project, but indicated the MRT Corp is also considering a private funding arrangement of around 10 to 30%. So it's going to be either under MRT Corp or from maybe a consortium of industry players.
On a related note, we're also asking you on Twitter right now, should government subsidize public transport like the MRT instead of trying to make it profitable? 60% have said yes, subsidize. 8.5% say must make profit. 13% say just privatize it. And 19% said at least break even la. The love's an addition for me, but yes.
So if you haven't weighed in on that poll, please do so. And while you mull over it, we're going to be having an interesting conversation on this, asking how do you balance between public good versus profit? And to help us answer that, we have on the line with us Pankaj C. Kumar, a financial market columnist and former chief investment officer. Good morning, Pankaj. Thanks for joining us. Now, MRT Corp is considering raising 10 to 30% of the total cost to develop MRT3 through private debt. Is this a normal method of funding for public transportation infrastructure, and what might be the mechanics of such a structure?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show. Good morning. Well, this is not really normal in my opinion. What the government is trying to do is to actually limit its own commitment in terms of raising new debts to fund the infrastructure projects. Of course, there are two ways to do this. One is to invite consortium or privately owned company together with the government to come in into an SPV where the SPV will provide the equity as well as debt. They are to go to the market in this way effectively. If the private party or the consortium comes in with 10 or 30%, the government's effective debt that is raised through the SPV is reduced. That's one way. Another way is, of course, they can do it via what we refer to as the PFI method, yeah, the private finance initiative method, where the government enters into an agreement to partially allow the private parties to come in, and the PFI itself will raise the debt required. So what the government is here doing is basically coming into some sort of lease agreement, yeah, whereby debts that is raised by the PFI itself will be repaid on a lease basis over a period of time.
Which is your preferred model, given that the government is currently fiscally constrained?
I think the SPV model is much more appropriate to me because it's cleaner. And of course, at the same time, the government does not really have that commitment to pay lease payments in the future. Yeah, so in that sense, the SPV model is much better. But if you ask me frankly, I'm a proponent of openness, and I think the government should first table this in parliament, yeah, get it approved with proper cost and benefit analysis, and once this is done, get the funding from the annual budget itself. Yeah, we don't raise debts for infrastructure projects, we will not be saddled with debt servicing burden. So to me, which can be an added cost to the consumer itself. I mean, for example, if we know the MRT3 is going to cost us like 30 billion to be built over 5 years, why can't the annual budget provide 6 billion ringgit a year and would then fund our infrastructure projects without a single debt?
So Pankaj, on that note, according to some reports or previous reports anyway, MRT3 could cost from 20 to 30 billion ringgit, although the actual number has not been pinned down just yet. What is the likelihood that this project will be financially self-sustaining? I mean, we have seen other countries like Hong Kong and Singapore, their own public transport systems do turn a profit, but most public transport systems in the world don't.
Yeah, that's correct. It's not easy to have a public infrastructure project to actually show profit. Yeah, Singapore and Hong Kong, to a certain extent, could be seen as an exceptional model where they have other revenue, not just the rail revenue. But at the same time, it's about how you fund your infrastructure projects, like I mentioned just now. And to answer this question in relation to, you know, self-sustaining, I think we've got to go back into our own experience when we started this MRT journey. Yeah? In fact, the Sungai Buloh Kajang MRT line at first was supposed to cost 12 billion ringgit with some 442,000 ridership. But today, you know, the actual cost, just construction alone, is 21 billion. And ridership is only one third of that, you know. And of course, we also have embarked on the MRT 2 line, where the expected ridership is about 530,000, yeah, and cost alone is about 30 billion. So can we actually really see profitability in these lines that we are building? I think it's very difficult. And in fact, when I was looking at the numbers, if you look at MRT Corp's financial statements itself, which the financial year ended 2020, you will see that they have already impaired down all the previous expenses or capex that they have done for the MRT project to the tune of 53 billion. Right? So almost 25 billion was impaired in 2017. And 2018, 2019, there was another 11.2 billion. And last year, another 8.9 billion. And so we are seeing all this expenditure that we have provided for has actually been covered back by the government via their contribution to MRT Corporation.
So with that in mind, Pankaj, and of course, ridership being a key part of whether whether a public transport solution is viable in the long run, whether profitable or not, what is the economic case for continuing a project in this instance, even if it is loss-making? Even if it is loss-making?
Yeah, I think this is a very tricky question because, first of all, we have to understand, do we really need an MRT line in the first place to actually replace our public infrastructure or to address our public infrastructure issues? I mean, in other countries, we have seen before you embark on MRT line, you have to make sure that you have the right ridership. You have not just numbers on paper, but actual ridership. And one of the other things that we see Malaysia lacks, or maybe the Klang Valley lacks, is the last mile connectivity. Yeah, a lot of people have this issue in terms of taking the feeder buses, for example. You know, they are not frequent. Yeah, and you still have to pay for the feeder bus, for example. Yeah, so although the feeder bus just collects like 1 ringgit, for example, but why bother collecting 1 ringgit? Yeah, when you're already making losses by the billions in the first place. Yeah, so you might as well just provide it for free. Yeah, and make sure that the feeder system is actually effective, yeah, and is able to carry passengers. I mean, I've taken buses, feeder buses, with only me as a passenger, only one person. Yeah, so you can see that the system is not working really. Yeah, that's resulting in our ridership to be too low. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, we have to make sure we have the right cost and benefit analysis table. Yeah. Does it make sense in the first place? And we don't, then we have to look at the other system. You know, buses, for example, right? Our bus system is not effective in the first place. Yeah. So if we have a system that is effective in terms of timeliness, in terms of efficiency, I think the public will be more than happy just to take buses instead of MRT.
So talk to us about that cost-benefit analysis then, Pankaj, because irrespective of whether the MRT is financially viable, I mean, there would be a spillover effect from that better connectivity. So how should we think about this financial commitment versus the tangible on-the-ground benefit of better transportation?
Yeah, the thing is, I think it's about cost, yeah? If you look at our infrastructure costs, whether it was high-speed rail, ECRL, and now we're talking about MRT3, if you look at the cost per kilometer basis, when we compare ourselves compared to, you know, our neighbors, what is the actual cost? Yeah, does it make sense? I mean, if you're going to spend a billion ringgit per kilometer for underground line, or maybe 600 million above ground per kilometer, is that reasonable? Yeah? To me, that's too expensive. Yeah, I mean, we have stations that we build that cost 100 million just a station alone. Does it make sense? Right, so all these are questions about being cost effective, yeah. And of course, as I mentioned earlier about funding, funding alone can actually kill the project, yeah. If you look at Malaysia's model, we have gone debt funding all the way. There's no equity in the projects, right? So with debt funding, which means that you are committed to pay interest. Yeah, your debt servicing cost alone is going to be a burden. Yeah, I don't have to go very far. If you take the MRT one line, let's say 30 billion that was raised for the MRT one line, yeah, at 4% interest, we are talking about 1.2 billion ringgit a month. And that alone is about 3.3 billion ringgit a day. Yeah. So if you have only 150,000 or 200,000 passengers paying 3 ringgit per pax, yeah, you are only collecting about 600,000. Yeah, that's barely 20% of the interest cost alone. Don't talk about operations and maintenance. Yeah, so the model doesn't work. The maths doesn't add up. So we need to relook as to how we fund our infrastructure project with a proper cost and benefit analysis. Yeah, to make sure that it actually shows that while we may not be profitable in the first, let's say, 5 or 8 years, but it should over time with ridership rising. You should come to profitability after a while.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Pankaj. That was Pankaj Sreekumar, financial market columnist and a former chief investment officer, giving us some insight into whether or not the MRT3 makes sense from a financial perspective. Right now, we're about to head into the 7:30 news bulletin, though, and then up next, discussing the progress of vaccine rollouts with Dale Fisher of the National University of Singapore. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.